You know, politicians do have to think about what we say. And I think the trouble with Twitter, the instantness of it, is I think there's too many twits might make a twat.
Hello, and welcome to the Open Conservative Project with me, Sam Colson, and my co-host, Tom Hobson. How are you doing, Tom?
Hi, Sam. I'm all right, it's a little bit early, but I'm here.
Are you hungover after a long night of drinking at the end of Conservative Party conference?
No, I'm not, because I haven't been this year. In fact, I haven't been for years. You're the one who's been more than me.
When was the last time you went to party conference?
Last time would probably be... Was it 2014 that we went? It really is years ago now.
It genuinely is years ago. I don't think you were there in 2014, because... I think you were there in 15, because in 2014... I remember texting you after David Cameron's speech had finished, and you were like, that was so great, we're definitely going to win a majority. And this is when it was not clear that we were going to win a majority.
Well, maybe you're right, but... okay.
But a while. It's been a while for me as well. I think it's been at least 3 years since I went. I don't really remember the last time I was there. But that would be for work and not... I was never doing the Tory Party conference the right way, Tom. I was never I was never doing it with loads of booze. Basically, is what I'm saying.
Was never. Well, arguably, thing. You were doing it the right way because you had an expenses paid trip. It's part of the reason I don't go, because you know you've got to set aside the best part of £1,000.
Yes, it's very expensive. How much are tickets? Do you know? I think for commercial they're like £900 a ticket or something like that.
I think the early bird member ones were around 50, 60 quid. I can't remember.
That's not so bad.
No, but this is everything on top, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I get that. And you know, the hotel stays and you spend a lot, you end up spending a lot on booze because the hotel that they have, the secure zone is expensive.
Yes.
So unless you can find someone to buy booze for you, it's very tricky. That's the big news this week. So should we start by looking at Rishi? Let's go through some of the speeches. Let's start with Big Rish.
Yeah. Big Rish.
He was early doors.
He was, wasn't he? And he was introduced by that young guy. It was quite interesting. I thought the young guy was quite good, actually. But, you know, we're talking about Rishi anyway. He did the funny kind of walk on stage and point at people, which I just thought, look...
Well, he's a rock star.
Awkward. I liked his intro piece, the very millennial graphic video. That was quite good, ending with his classic signature.
I didn't watch the intro videos. I think in the hall I always found them quite effective, you know, move you to tears as David Cameron is, you know, hugging an old pensioner or something. But online, I don't think they have the same effect. I didn't watch the Boris one either, which we're working on to. But I saw all of Rishi's speech. I thought it would be longer than it was. It felt quite short. I don't know if that's the norm. I kind of meant to Google that, actually, but didn't get around to it. Of like the norm of like Chancellor's speeches. But I thought it was just incredibly bland. And he didn't really say anything. And actually looking through... The Tories have been sending out, at the end of the day, a Conservative conference team wrap-up. Mm. Dear Sam, you know, day one closes, blah, blah, blah. So I've kept those emails. And the one about Rishi is the main thing, is this 2,000 AI scholarships, which I just don't think is a very big deal.
Probably not, no, in the grand scheme of things. And he also makes a big play of the super deduction thing, which, you know, I haven't actually properly delved into, to be honest. But no, like, these are not headline grabbing things. They're not.
No.
They're not super exciting. They might in practice be really good, but they're not. You know, talking through the prism of our podcast of how do the headlines impact elsewhere or on the ground. These things don't cut through.
No,
to be honest,
they're garbage. I wonder.
I didn't say that.
But are they designed to cut through? I guess to an extent they are. Yes, but also. What I've heard all week is that Team Boris were going around hoovering up any good policy idea to stick into Boris's speech. Which, again, we can come on to whether or not that was successful.
Yeah. Well, it does seems... make you question, you know, how many ideas are there left?
Are you going all Francis Fukuyama or Mitomo? Is it at the end of history?
I didn't say that, but you know, does it feel? Is the fact that it was bland and you know the policy was light across the board? Does it say that they are a government running out of ideas, running out of steam? Mm-hmm. I don't know, Sam.
Maybe we start talking about one of the big themes of this conference, which was, as I saw it, this generation of Conservative government, the third generation of consecutive Conservative government, saying, mm-hmm. God, you know, hasn't the country been mismanaged for the last 10 years?
Yeah.
Thank God someone sensible is here to deal with all this mess. You know, conveniently ignoring that they have been the ones, directly or indirectly. Yes. I mean, directly in some ministers' case. Michael Gove has literally been in the cabinet, you know, off and on, but mostly on, since 2010. It's the exact same group of people that are still in charge of all these departments. So I don't know. But anyway, that's the narrative they're going for. And I think Rishi's speech had a good bit of that in it, you know.
But it's a preemptive, defensive narrative because it basically says, yeah, the last few governments were crap. And what will happen at the next general election is an argument from the opposition basically saying, well, you've been in power for so long, why haven't you solved all these problems?
Yes.
And if you're preemptively saying the last few governments were crap, and it is also the only way that Boris can distance himself from the last few governments as a new Conservative, I can see why they're doing it. It's a strategy at the moment of setting the tone of, well, this is a completely different Conservative government.
Yeah. It's an interesting strategy, and I think it could be quite effective. Weirdly.
Yeah, because it will be.
Why wouldn't it be? But I don't know, because people don't know about most of the ministers, right? This is always the thing. Like, politicos know who the, you know, Justice Secretary is, but no one else in their right mind knows who that is. So it is quite easy for a new Prime Minister to come and be like, we're going to do the job right this time, because no one knows if he's changed his team. And in Boris's case, he has changed his team, you know, a fair bit from the mayor. But, like, it's, I don't know, a bit same old, well, same even, old, isn't
even,
it?
Even the May era did kind of the same, you know. Mm. You could tell she had no time for Osborne.
Yes.
And probably limited time for Cameron. And she spent her time banging on about burning injustices that have been ignored for years.
Mm-hmm.
And this is essentially the same strategy.
Yes, I think that's actually, you've touched on something there that I want to talk about as well today, which is having watched this stuff for about 10 years fairly closely now, they're basically saying the same thing time after time. So, not all right. In Boris's speech, Tom, let's just talk about this in the round, and we'll just
start. We've moved on from Rishi completely, haven't we?
Well, I mean, he didn't say anything, did he? If he'd said more, I'd be more interested in it. But you know, the whole conference was around this idea of levelling up, right? They were really trying to define what that actually is, and I think Boris actually did it quite well, which was this idea that the southeast is overheating, the rest of the economy needs to kind of, grow alongside London and blah, 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 and we need to, you know, have better quality of opportunity and blah, blah, blah. These are exactly the same things that David Cameron was saying in 2012.
Yeah.
Like, identical. And that's why we have things like Metro Mayors. Like, we've done this already, have we not? This, like, I'm not saying we completed the project, obviously there's, like, massive inequality, but I'm just saying that's been the message of the Conservative governments over the last decade.
Northern powerhouse.
Yes. The long-term economic plan. I was thinking about that the other day. What a brilliant slogan that was. And I don't think levelling up is quite on the same, on a par yet. But maybe it could get there.
Well, if you want to talk slogans quickly, do you want to talk about getting on with the job and build back better?
Yes.
Because those were the two slogans of conference. I mean, getting on with the job speaks in my mind to running out of ideas. And build back better, I still don't know. Is it build back better? Is it build back burger? Is it build back batter? Is it build back butter?
I mean, they were all...
yes. They were all... What does it mean?
Well, none of it means anything, does it, ultimately? and it is this kind of encapsulation of... I think you're right in that I don't think anyone's got any ideas left. I think this is what happens when a party's been in government for too long, right? Where, and we saw this with Blair and Brown, they did run out of ideas towards the end.
Mm.
Like, the big, you could argue the big thing that the Conservatives were charged with doing over the last decade-ish was getting the public finances under control. You could make that argument, okay? To which I would say perhaps they fail. But mainly because of COVID, because actually I feel like Osborne and Hammond left things in a fairly good position. If the status quo had continued. That isn't to say it was perfect, but it was better than it is right now, and it was better than it was in 2008, 2009. So, progress. Yeah. So they've essentially failed on that count. And because of external forces, but regardless, they failed. And without that, like, that fundamental ideology in there to guide what you want to do, how do you come up with ideas? You know, because you can't, an idea doesn't exist in a vacuum of, you know, this is a good idea, apart from things like pet passports, which I suspect do exist in slightly in a vacuum, and like silly little one-offs like that, you know. But yeah, you need some strategy, you need a vision for the country, which I didn't see necessarily, I don't think.
You want levelling up to be something tangible. And you want it to succeed, because actually the thrust and the idea of it, in or outside a vacuum, is good. It is that, you know, move jobs, growth, opportunities away from one specific place, or, you know, a set of specific places, and, you know, provide it elsewhere. And speaking as someone who, you know, sits in and elsewhere in one of the regions where it's slightly depressing that almost all talented young people move out, such as yourself. You do want it to succeed. Mm. You want it to be something, which is why you still end up buying into it.
Yes. I agree with that, in that, like, a slogan's go, it's a good one for that reason. I actually watched Boris's speech yesterday. I thought it was quite good at the time.
Yeah.
I saw reaction on Twitter was, you know, middling. With all the normal people saying it was great and all the normal people saying it was shit, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So that's not a very good barometer. I thought it was funny. I thought it was basically a stand-up comedy routine.
Yes, you know? Which is worrying.
A little bit, but also it made me question, like, what the fundamentals of, like, what should that speech be? So Keir's version of this speech, which we talked about last week, was the very serious, very personal, this is who I am, this is my vision for the country.
Yep.
So we, and then we take that in contrast to Boris's, where he made a lot of, I think, actually pretty funny jokes. He's a funny guy. Yes. He's a good orator.
Yeah.
He had a really good pop at the Labour Party. You know, folks, you know, look how divided they are. Can't stop hating on each other, all this stuff, which is entirely true. Like, it's a completely valid thing. And it did lead the headlines, so maybe that gets a bit of cut through to the people that, like, properly engage with the news. I don't know. I actually thought it was all right, but it was policy light. Okay, so we're kind of just back to that point a little bit. So it has all the aims.
What is the point of a leader speech? Is it to, you know, speak to the room, G up conference, get people excited, etc., etc.? And I think Boris spoke more to that room than he did, than Keir did. I think Keir wanted to speak more to the wider public. Yep. And Boris spoke to that room. And it was, as someone who was listening to it with me, red meat to the room in so many ways. Which is probably why you liked it, Sam.
Yeah, but
you know,
not...
the things you described you like were the jokes and they having a pop at the Labour Party.
Yeah, I think it was funny. I mean, I said this last time, like, Keir had some jokes, but he's just not very good at telling them. And I don't think the jokes were very funny. But, you know, maybe it's because I'm more used to Boris's routine and it was just him reeling out, you know, another set of hits. I think
are people going to get bored of that?
Yes, and that is my criticism of him as like a prime minister, right? Which is like, I don't really care if the prime minister's a funny guy or not. I couldn't care less about that. I want them to be a serious person, you know?
Well, serious people will want them to be serious in their role.
Yeah. I tell a couple of jokes, that's fine. But also, let's have some ideas for the country, please.
<You know? laughs> Well, I would say the one idea that came out of it is, and I'm not even sure if this is an idea, it's an aim, it's a target, it's an ambition, it's a demand, which is high wages.
Mm.
This sort of, and you could see it in all the traditionally supportive think tanks, commentators, etc., basically saying, you know, what are high wages without increased productivity? What are high wages without improving this, that, and the other?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Adam Smith Institute saying the whole thing was economically illiterate.
Yeah.
And it's just going to cause inflation. And, yeah, his previous backers, the Lord Wolfson, Brexit supporter, basically saying, well, we've increased our wages and it hadn't made any difference.
Yeah.
People still aren't applying for the jobs. You know, is Boris really towing a fine line? Is he taking a big gamble on giving people high wages and just, or insisting on high wages and hoping it works without an inflationary spike and all the problems that will flow from that? Yeah, I think he is. He's betting all his eggs on that being a success, and that is essentially levelling up at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that is a very good read of the situation. I think the wages thing is so interesting because it is... I view this as a fundamental rethink of how the economy works in some ways, of how the British economy should function. And I welcome that to a degree. Having previously worked in a sector... I'm going to be as vague as humanly possible here, Tom, in a sector with famously low wages that really wasn't very making any money before the pandemic, was then hit very hard by the pandemic with loads of staff leaving to go back to their home countries.
Yeah.
It wasn't sustainable pre-pandemic. I don't see a world in which it becomes sustainable overnight post-pandemic, but that does mean a lot of individual businesses closing. And then I guess the idea is they are going to be replaced by different types of businesses as we pull more towards a very high-skilled service economy, a la Singapore, for instance. I think that is the macro goal.
I agree, that is the macro goal. But is that going to happen?
You know, so since we started the podcast, I'm no longer a lobbyist, I'm a software engineer. This is something we talk about a lot, which is... None of my colleagues had traditional routes into it. And we've all had training in different ways, but like schools right now are not able to provide any of that training.
No.
Because the demand for people with good software engineering skills who are also good listeners and can teach, which is an entirely different skill set from, you know, this fairly high-skilled job anyway, isn't there. You can't, the market rate is just way too high for schools to be able to afford it, okay?
Yeah.
So then there's this huge knock-on of the only people that can do this kind of stuff are those that are, like, you know, middle-class-ish, going to university, have been exposed to it from a young age, blah, 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 and it becomes this, like, very thin segment of the population. That's one example, and I suspect it affects other high-skilled, inverted commas, industries, like law, you know, consulting, you know, blah, 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 those kind of things that the government's pushing towards. So I worry that there's actually just going to be this huge, a bigger, rather than actually levelling up, I think there might be a bigger gap in 15 years' time if this is the policy this government continues to pursue. Because you're just not going to have the people there to fill the gap. And at the same time, yes, all the costs will have gone up. So I don't think they're doing it in the smartest way, but I get what they're going at, you know? It's like they put the roof on a house without building anything else. Do you know what I mean? They're saying, this is just brilliant. And then you take a step back and you realise it doesn't have any foundations and it's not supported by anything. The foundations in this sense being education and like this gradual push towards better skills and like more opportunities. And actually, 20 AI graduates or whatever it is, isn't going to cut it, Rishi. You know, like that's not what makes it.
I thought it was 2,000.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Even 2,000 is just not very many.
No, it's not. It's not. I don't know. Should we get back on, you know, what conference was? I think another thing that's slightly, I don't know if it's worries or perturbs or interests me, are when we went to conference, there was a whole different group of people. I think that the party has completely changed, or is in a way of changing, since the advent of Boris as leader. There are more people now who identify with what he says and therefore associate themselves, join the party, etc., etc., in the same way that we did 10 plus years ago for someone else. And as a result, you know, the way it's going is very much in his direction and his arguments. I don't think a lot of the current members have the same views on the economy or anything else that we do, or certainly I do anyway.
Yeah.
And that actually slightly worries me. You know, are they conservatives? Are they?
Well, let's clarify who we're talking about here. Are we talking about, you know, that photo of the three lads going around the internet who were like, you know, they were what they looked like us, Tom, about, you know, when we were 10 years ago. When we were in, you know, crap suits trying to look cool at party conference. I don't know.
Speak for yourself.
Are you talking about them, or are you who are we? I'd like to be more specific, because I just feel like the majority of people that attend conference are either old members.
Yeah.
And when I say old, I mean in age, not long-term supporters. I suspect have been going for a long time, and, like, you know, they centre their life around probably conservative activities and blah blah blah. They're ingrained in their membership, and lobbyists. Those are the two types of people, and then you get the occasional youth, you know.
Well, you say that, but there was something put out by the party saying that a quarter of all the attendees were young conservatives, and that is under 25. That's a lot. That is a huge amount. Let me ask the question in a different way. Would someone like Ken Clark join the current Conservative Party?
I think that's a very good question. I think the answer is no.
Would someone like Michael Heseltine join the current Conservative Party?
I don't know enough about Michael Heseltine. I just know that he killed an Alsatian with his bare hands once.
But I suppose the thrust of my point is, even a lot of the 2019 intake MPs, and I suppose I should probably be very careful about what I say, is the current success of how you approach it more on loyalty to the orthodoxy and leader than interest, reform, zeal, ability, etc., etc.?
Yeah. I think that's true, but I think that was probably true of when we joined, and I suspect the IDS era conservatives that came before us said the same thing. Are these people true conservatives? All they want to do is hug a hoodie and go and chat to huskies. You know? Like, environmentalism not seen as a conservative cause to the same degree back then. You know, you push it another 10 years prior and it would have been even more different in terms of the social attitudes at the time. You know?
Yes.
But the majority of the party membership versus what it looks like now.
So the party is just rebranding itself and, you know, changing itself to be fit for the 2020s.
Exactly. And I think it's just this, like, it's just a cyclical thing. I think all parties do that. I think it's actually one of the big failings of the Labour Party is it doesn't do that, right? It goes back to the ideas of the 70s the whole time and doesn't really seek out anything new, which is obviously, like, what Blair was so good at is finding that new stuff, and what Keir, I think, is trying to do and maybe struggling a bit with, because it's hard to pull people out of the Stone Age. it's that. I think that's, you know, partly what makes the party a success.
That's fair.
Gen Z Tories, isn't it? You know, they're different from us millennial Tories, Tom, is the point. in answer to your other question, I don't think Ken Clark would join. I think he'd be a bit like me at the moment, which is fairly politically homeless. I don't really agree with the Boris project. I don't love his top team. you know,
yeah.
Like, not for me, that's fine. Like, maybe one day it will become for me again, and or maybe another party will, you know.
Well, there is no other party. Similar. I mean, that's the thing, and I think that's also part of the gambit that he is taking on. He knows that on if you're in the centre right, there is no alternative at the moment. There used to be. You used to be able to, you know, if you were further on the right and you were a bit wound up by things, you wanted low taxes, etc., etc., you could look to UKIP. And to a lesser extent, the Brexit Party, although I think the Brexit Party was, you know, not fully formed, so you didn't quite know what they stood for. They just stood for Brexit.
Yeah.
And if you were on the centre-right and you were, you know, a little bit wound up by people who were a bit too right-wing in government, cabinet, etc., you could look to the Liberal Democrats at one point because you had your Orange Book Liberals, you had Nick Clegg, Jeremy Brown, David Laws, you know, intelligent centre-right alternatives. And at the moment, do you have an alternative? And the answer is no, there is no alternative. You know, Reform UK is not cutting through in any way, shape or form. And I think the current government knows this. Of course they know this. You know, they're not stupid. And where would anyone like us turn? And the only where that you would turn, the only place that you would turn is essentially to not voting.
Yeah.
Because you're a little bit put off by it. Although you are centre-right, and there is no valid choice.
Yeah.
You know, I at the next general election, I can see literally the only centre of or right of centre party on that ballot paper will be the Conservative Party. There won't be a Reform UK candidate where I live. I'm absolutely convinced. And it just
and that,
it'll be and do you vote? Do you not vote?
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I guess there's two things to say about that. One, I 100% agree with the majority of what you said, which is like, yeah, there's just nothing. There's nothing else there. And like, I've spoiled my ballot at the last, I don't know, six elections.
Do you want to say that in a podcast?
Yeah, I'm fine with saying that. I don't care. Like, I've never found a party that I want to vote for. I was never going to vote for Corbyn's Labour. You know?
God, no.
Like, I mean, that's just insanity on a number of levels. And yeah, I didn't want to vote for Theresa May when she was, you know, fucking everything up with Brexit. And then I didn't want to vote for Boris. So yeah, like I'd spoil my ballot, but I still go and participate and show that, you know, I'm not a fan. But I do think it's the political science side of this, right? Which is like, you don't go out and vote because you do or don't like the parties. You go out and vote because it's kind of bred into you, you know, for lack of
yeah,
better words.
Yeah.
Like it's all about, did your parents vote, do your peers vote? That's why people go out and vote on a political science
yeah.
level. So I don't see there'll be a huge uptick in not voting, unless it looks like the Tories are just unbelievably safe going into that next general election. And then,
complacent.
And then I think we get a 2001 election result where the Tories lose a few seats, but they still have a majority, you know? And Keir can step down and say, I've tried to reform the party. And now
worked.
A true moderniser, please come along and finish the job. Let's get back into government.
Hmm.
I think that's the cycle. By which time, you know, Boris will probably want to go not long after that, won't he?
Well, you say that, but, you know...
Torrid 5 years or whatever at that point.
Well, a couple of years ago, he was talking about doing 10 years. You know, he wants to be more... He wants to do more than Thatcher did in terms of time.
Yeah, in terms of time. Probably not in terms of stuff done.
Well, he's got Brexit done.
Yeah, I guess so. That was fairly teed up for him.
It wasn't. He can already point to a fair few things that he has done. Whether or not that will carry him through the next general election is still an open question, if you ask me.
Yeah. It's all about how people feel, and I think this is where the inflation thing could really come back to bite them, where regardless if his claims, and I believe they are claims at the moment, that the ONS is pushing back on, that this is the highest wage growth we've had in ages, I believe, I'm not going to say it's a full lie, but I think it's very, very close to one, anyway, if that doesn't actually ring true with people, if people don't genuinely feel that in their, you know, pound in their pocket, then, you know, I think they'll be in more trouble. But this idea that they're going to raise taxes now and cut them again in a couple of years is kind of what Osborne did, but this is on a much tighter timescale than Osborne had. He had full 5 years, and the Tories have got three at a push, but more likely 2.5 before the next election. And I don't think it's enough time to bring us back to where Rishi would like us to be. So it's a very tough one. It's all too condensed, these timescales.
We can do a whole podcast on when the next election will be, because there are so many different factors you can talk about. And maybe we should at some point, you know, new boundaries, old boundaries, local elections at the same time, yada, 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 polling, blah, blah, blah. So we could do that. Maybe that's next week's podcast, because I think that's going to be kind of dominating the conversation a little bit. Should we talk about one more thing?
Yes, go on.
So yesterday was the ending of the uplift on Universal Credit.
Yes.
And concurrently, we had the Work and Pension Secretary singing. What did she sing?
I'm having the time of my life.
Yes, she did. And it's clearly really jarred with all the government's critics. And, you know, I can see why.
Yes.
Maybe she should have kept her head down a little bit.
Yeah.
And winter is approaching.
Mm-hmm.
And gas prices at the same time yesterday, it was almost like a perfect storm, really, wasn't it?
Indeed.
Rose fourfold again and hit a new peak. So, what, you know, are all these things, we talked about it a little bit last week, are all these things going to come back and bite?
Yes. And this is going to come across as extremely callous now. But it's not going to bite the people that vote Tory, if we're framing it in an election way.
Okay.
And I think that is why people like Therese Coffey feel like they don't have to keep their head down or have any sort of, I don't know, humility about the situation they're putting people in, you know? Because I genuinely don't think that they realise how bad it could get this winter. I think the head is truly in the sand. And they've been given their marching orders by the Treasury, and they're doing what they're told. And it's not, you know, oh, it wasn't me, it was just, you know, not us, Gov. It's that. Well, I mean, Therese Coffey, we spoke about this last week, was the only Tory minister to go on the radio and say, just go and get another job. Go and get a job.
Yeah.
Go and get another job to make up the money. So I don't know, I don't think her heart is particularly with the people that are going to suffer from this. So,
no, well, we're going to see, aren't we? We are going to see. It's going to be an interesting few months. But there has to be some positives. There really has to be. That still keep us interested, engaged. And, you know, I still call myself centre-right.
Yep. Yeah.
Can we at least come up with one thing each that says, you know, why we're still kind of doing this podcast and not, we're not total downers on what's going on? New trade deals.
You go on trade deals, and then I'll talk about
it. I was just going to say, new trade deals. So many new trade deals in the post-Brexit area. That is the one piece of actual global Britain that we were told all about in the run-up to the referendum and subsequently by the current government ministers that would be a success of Brexit. And actually, these new trade deals are showing the one example at the moment of where a positive outward approach is being engaged with. And I think they are the best thing that has been done in the last few years since the Brexit referendum. There we go. Yeah. That's one for me.
That's very good. No, that's a nice one. I think more trade is always a good thing. I've got one which is a bit different, less about the government. There was a delegate at a conference there was an interview with Oliver Dowden, and Oliver Dowden has been big on, you know, defending statues, you know, etc. He's an anti-woke, Tom. He doesn't like the woke. And a delegate asked him, was gay marriage a woke idea? You know?
Interesting.
Was women's suffrage a woke idea? And I really liked that framing of the issue because I think the party, in some quarters, not in all, has got quite carried away with this idea of the anti-woke. And I like that reframing of it. And I think it shows that there are still people like us in the party to push back on some of the, like, the bits that I don't love about the Johnson regime, you know, and his people. And maybe they are the liberal metropolitan elite, Tom. but they're my kind of liberal metropolitan elite. And I think they're still there. And I would hope that feeds through into kind of into policies at some point, that, like, there are some areas where I hope the rhetoric isn't matched by policy, you know. In most mm-hmm. areas, I wish it was a bit more. I want the country to level up. I want the people of Doncaster to have as much success as the people of York. That's the Prime Minister's example from yesterday, right? I want that to happen. And yeah, I think there are still people in there pushing for those ideas to make it happen.
I think you're right that it will filter through. And the reason I say that is when this current government falls, I think it will fall hard. You know, 80-seat majority, which way do you go? The simple numbers would tell you, you go down. Mm-hmm. And when it does fall because of some error or another, internal or external, who's going to be left to pick up the pieces? Because there'll be a whole lot of people who just walk away from it.
Yeah.
Yeah. They will walk away from it and go and do something else. And then there'll be a huge amount of introspection, much like there is in the Labour Party at the moment, mm-hmm. as to what the party stands for. And that's when what you're saying will filter through. And yeah. I suspect it'll reach the ascendancy again in how the party believes in itself.
I suspect so. I found the quotes, which I'll read out from this fringe. So a Tory member challenging Oliver Dowden, who, in quotes, says he is constantly fighting the woke agenda as culture secretary. He was culture secretary and chair of the party. The delegate said, "I don't like all this anti-woke rhetoric. Was universal suffrage woke? Were LGBT rights woke? Have we learned nothing from the progress of the last 100 years? Dowden responded, saying, "This is not about standing in the way of greater opportunities for women and ethnic minority people." Apparently, the crowd was more on the side of the delegate, according to the journalist, who's Dan Bloom, who works for the Mirror. Yeah, I did like Dowden's quote, "People need to get off their pelotons and back to their desks." This was about one permanent secretary who, I think, quipped in an interview that she loved working from home because it meant that when she had a bit of free time, she could hop on her peloton. Which I don't think is a bad thing, Tom. I think a bit of a break from the desk actually can be quite good to, you know, get the old mental juices flowing. But Oliver Dowden does not like that at all.
Right, Sam, let's leave it there. And I will say thank you. Thank you for listening to the, in speech quotation marks, the Open Conservative Project. I think it's fair to say we've been a little bit down on things. And I suspect that's more, you know, we are a heart centre right and conservative people, but I think we're just a bit frustrated than anything else. But anyway, thank you for listening.
Have a good week. Ayúdase a amar.